Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Make Sense with Mentally, the show that places power in your hands and information for your mind. Let others leave small lines, but not you. Let others place their future in someone else's hands, but if you listen to the show, you'll make sure it's not you. We'll provide you with the keys, but it's up to you to unlock the door. Welcome to Make Sense with Menelik. I'm your host. Today's show is about the miseducation of love. Here in America, 60% of relationships end, meaning we break up, we go different ways. To me, that's enough to say we need to relook at this and decide to do something different, because we're not going anywhere without our partner. We're not doing anything or going far without our other half. Today's show, I decided to have couples on instead of relationship experts. And I did this because I wanted individuals who went through the process and succeeded at it and are an example for you and I. Now, they may say things that many of us don't agree with or may be against the norm, but that's okay. Because when we're in this dire of a situation when it comes to relationships, we need someone that is against the norm. So this show today, it's for what I call the thermostats. The thermostats are those who are willing to go into a room and they make it warm. If it's hot, they'll make it cold. This show isn't for the thermometers, the people that adjust what's going on in the world. You know, the individuals that say it'll never work. This show is for the individuals that are willing to develop new strategies and skills and to look at things through a new lens. So I'm going to bring on my first guest. Her name is Janelle Smith. She's practiced her and her husband successful relationship building. And I'd like to bring her on to say a few things for you and I. Janelle, how are you doing?
Good afternoon, Sal. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
As you mentioned, my name is Janelle Smith. My husband and I have been married 3 years next month. And I'm excited to be on the show.
Okay. How long have you guys been together?
Let's see. It's 2016 now, so about 8 years.
8 years. And you guys practice, or you did a little something different when you dated, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. I hope that thought. I want to bring our next two guests on, Chris Mitchell and Joy Mitchell. Chris and Joy, how you doing?
Hello. How is everybody out there?
Good, good. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'll go first. This is Joy. My name is Joy Mitchell. Chris and I have been together 11 years. We've been married 5 years. It'll be 6 years, July 24th. And I as well, I'm happy to be on the show.
Yes, sir. This is Chris speaking. How y'all doing? Hey, everybody. Like Moloch said, we've been together for, I think that's 11 years. We've been married for six. We have two children. We met at college. And since then, the rest is history. So, once again, excited to be on the show and excited to give our perspective that is more than likely different from the majority. But definitely think that people can benefit from it and, you know, grow from it.
Well, with the show today, I definitely want to get young couples that have practices. Like you said, Janelle and Derek have been together for 8 years, and Chris and Joy have been together for 11. And that's great, you know, on what goes on these days. You know, most people can't stay together. They'd be so in love for 3 or 4 weeks, and they'd be hot and heavy, and then they'll be broke apart, you know. So These guests today have practiced relationship success, and that's why they're here. You know, that's why we're going to go with them. So we'll go with the first question. What exactly was the relationship path that you guys chose, and what actually made it different from what people did? What was the norm that you saw, and why did you guys choose to go a different way?
I guess I can start first. You had to excuse my voice. I'm feeling a little congested this morning, so hopefully I'm not too nasal. However, my husband and I, we were friends first. We had no intentions on being in a romantic relationship. We were just friends first, always hanging out, really good communication, and then from there, we start being attracted to one another through our personalities and our similarities and our love for Christ and our families and just different social activities like we like to be a part of. And so I think, unlike some relationships who start off romantic at first, my husband and I were friends and then best friends. And then we became a part in the dating relationship.
Is that something that you see that normally doesn't happen anymore?
I wouldn't say that it doesn't happen anymore. A lot of people may choose to just be in a dating relationship off of attraction, whether it's physical or emotional attraction. But it's really important to start off as friends, getting to know each other, personalities, likes, dislikes, behavior, characteristics, and different things that may attract you to someone prior to just being infatuated with how they look.
Right. All right, Chris and Joe, you guys up next. So what did you guys choose the path that you chose as far as building your relationship? And how did that start, actually?
For me, I had attempted to embark on relationships, and it didn't work. And so at a young age, when I was like 11 years old, I had predetermined that, hey, I want to be married by 25. And coming to college, you know, talking to different women and really trying to explore my horizon, there was a sense of incompleteness. There's a sense of, you know, wasting my time. And me, I hate wasting time. Anything and everything I do, I really want to make sure that I'm establishing relationships. So as an only child and coming from a single parent home, relationships, I value them. So I always say that when I find the right girl, you know, I want to make that commitment, and I don't want to waste time. I'm not thirsty, but I don't want to hurt her or hurt myself in the process of trying to find this relationship. So I kind of knew that I wanted to be in a faithful, monogamous relationship before I even got in one. And I think oftentimes today that is something that is not celebrated or even looked up to. So before I even met Joy, I knew that I wanted to settle down. I knew the different qualities and standards that I wanted my significant other to have. And so it got to a point where I wouldn't settle unless the female that I was looking for had those qualities. And for me, the qualities weren't necessarily physical. They weren't necessarily mental. It was more so that connection that I was looking for.
I think the first part of it was, how did it start? I would definitely say Chris and I, we were friends, but it wasn't really one of my like close friend relationships. But I met him, you know, in undergrad. He was actually my orientation leader, and actually we had a couple people that we both knew who knew of us. And kind of, you know, told us about each other. And we didn't actually meet until maybe like months or a year later. But I think, you know, ultimately when I began to have more conversation with Chris, we figured that we had a lot of similarities. Like when Chris mentioned, you know, coming from a single parent home, I did as well, you know, living with my mom. We would have conversations about relationships. And, you know, I had my father in the picture, but just there was a desire to have, you know, a strong, cohesive foundation between me and the person I was going to marry. So for me, I thought at a pretty young age that that was something that I desired. Of course, you know, most girls desire to be married and all of those things, but for me it was that foundation of a strong relationship, a strong marriage, because I didn't see that. So because I didn't see it, that was something that I desired to have for myself, and I also knew that I wanted it to be something that was built on a strong, sturdy foundation and not something that I was going to waste my time with just to be, you know, divorced or whatever, or just for it to fall apart because I didn't really put in the effort for it.
It's actually a great response. So we have 50 to 60% of relationships failing these days. And that's not even to mention the ones that, you know, the people that stay in relationships that are unhappy, but they stay in it, you know. That doesn't even include that. So the number could actually be higher. But what do you guys see as the reason why most relationships are failing? And in contrast as to why the relationship you guys established succeeded?
I could say for sure that the unwillingness to compromise or the unwillingness to change or to submit, that's a huge thing because you have two adults coming together. So you're not children, you're not being told what to do, but you have two adults coming together that are already set in their ways and set in their mindsets and have different educational backgrounds, and then you're asking them to basically follow the other person in the way they do things. And so a lot of times when you're unwilling to compromise or even communicate what it's going to take for you to change, that can be difficult.
Right. Now that you said some interesting, check out to me, you mentioned submit. And in relationship, well, what I've noticed with this popular culture and people not really willing to stick it out, that whole submit word becomes a bad word.
A negative connotation with it. Absolutely.
Yeah, negative connotation. And I think that a lot of times we oftentimes confuse the word submit and think of it as a negative thing, whereas someone's supposed to rule over you or dictate what mm-hmm. you do and how you do it, what you say, how you say it. And really that's not the case. I think that people don't know what true submission is. And so the way I think that the structure and relationship works is you submit to each other and you compromise, like you said earlier, you compromise with each other, you bend for each other, you know, and a lot of times
right. It
becomes one-sided and the submission process
Absolutely.
Becomes something that women hate and that men think they're supposed to overlord over their women. And that's not one of the cases in this situation. So I think, I believe submission to each other to make each other happy. Like for me, my goal every day is to be with my family, make my wife happy, make my children happy. And if that means I go without, if that means that I have to sacrifice something for them, I'm willing to do that. And so to go along with the submitting, equal submission, the sacrifice of relationship, the sacrifice can mean hurting yourself in a way that will allow the relationship to work. So like, okay, because one night you want to go out and you really want to go out and hang out with the fellas, making that decision saying, you know what, I'm going to stay home with my lady, or I'm going to, you know, get some work done around the house, be productive instead of going out. And that sacrifice of fun can help you in the long run and show that your significant other is priority.
I would say, you know, there's several reasons why, you know, relationships today are failing, or people are in a relationship and they're emotionally distant or not present. But I think some main things, and I agree with both Janelle and Chris, I think some other factors is people aren't, you know, of course, definitely people aren't willing to put in the work, but I think also people think that when you're married that, you know, it's about, oh, I'm marrying the person that I love and I'm getting all of this out of it. I'm getting all this love, all this support. But, you know, honestly, when I look at marriage, a lot of it is selfless. And I feel like
Absolutely.
A lot of times people want to be in relationships and it's like an instant gratification. And they think, you know, well, you're not making me happy. You're not doing this right. You're not doing that right. And, you know, not realizing that there's work on both parts. And also another component is people don't realize that even if your spouse stops doing what they're supposed to do, you're still supposed to move forward and still maintain your part. Right. Even when they're not acting right, even if, you know, if there's somebody being selfish or if someone has an attitude, you're still supposed to function and keep moving because, you know, you all are one. And so right. I think a lot of times people are not willing to put in that work and really, you know, sacrifice, as Chris was saying. And then I also think, you know, I hear a lot of times people say, oh, you know, they, especially, you know, in the Black community, we glamorize people in Hollywood who are together and, you know, that's a power couple. I want to be like Will and Jada. I want to be like Beyonce and Jay-Z. But, I mean, you only see the outside, and I think a lot of times people are not willing to really fight for what they want and understand mm-hmm. that you won't be gratified every day. Sometimes you feel like you don't love that person. Sometimes you feel like you don't like that person. And you have to be able to kind of, you know, change your mentality and do things differently to keep that love, to keep that foundation. You have to, you know, sometimes you got to go back to the basics and start over again and mm-hmm. really have conversation and really, really put forth the effort and really understand that when you made those vows, it was forever. And so you have to work with what you have and be willing to compromise and be willing to try even when they aren't and be able to love a person even when they aren't lovable. So I think, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of it is people just think, well, if I'm not happy, then I'm on to the next one.
Would you guys say that your relationship has faced the same type of situations that the relationships that failed? But you guys made different decisions, so there was a different outcome? Or would you say, well, we just didn't experience certain stuff that they experienced, and that's why they failed? Well, how would you guys see that?
Excuse me. Go ahead, Joy.
I think it was Chris.
Yeah, that was me. If you got something to know, you can go ahead.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I was sneezing. I think every relationship, thank you. I think every relationship faced several difficulties. God bless me. So, excuse me. I do feel like every relationship faces its own difficulties. I don't think one relationship can mirror another, whether that's addictions, different strongholds, whether that's cheating or someone not communicating, whether there's, you know, whatever relationship is going on. I mean, it doesn't make one issue or one situation bigger or worse than another, because something as simple as, well, you know, not taking out the trash versus my husband's addicted to alcohol. A problem is a problem is a problem. And so how you deal with it, I think, makes or breaks a relationship. And how you communicate with it, how you make a plan to face it and to change things together, I think mm-hmm. that makes the huge difference. Because just because one relationship isn't facing something as extreme as an addiction doesn't mean that they're not also going through their own problems. And so mm-hmm. I think if we look at each relationship individually and say, okay, well, this is their problem and this is their issues that they're having, that can be just as monumental as another relationship. And so I really caution people to not compare themselves to other people's relationships. You know, yeah. that can be a huge send-off to say, mm-hmm. well, you know, we're going through this and, well, they're only going through that and that's not a big deal. And everyone has their own breaking points and their own bending points. And so I would never compare myself and my situation to another person's, whether just because it may not seem like such a big deal. Everyone has their own limits.
True that. That's true. I think the part, I might repeat the question one more time. I'm about to go segue somewhere else, which Janelle was, it led me somewhere.
What she left off.
What'd you say?
So you can pick up where she left off.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the bending, and, you know, it's very important. You know, you really can't compare yourself. And when you find, when you're young and you compare yourself, so I'll be honest, in our relationship, I found myself comparing my relationship to my friends who have been married before I got married. And so I can't, because there's two different struggles. I mean, I've had friends who dealt with infidelity. I've had friends who dealt with addiction. I've had friends who dealt with all types of problems. And by the grace of God, those problems are not mine. And so for me to even compare, even think to compare what they have or what they have going on, you know, with to me, I really can't, because their journey is their journey. And so, granted, all relationships have struggles. If you don't struggle in relationship, if you're not struggling in relationship now and you think it's all perfect, eventually struggle will come. And how you operate, how you act and react in those struggling situations in your relationship kind of dictate how well your relationship will go. So I'll give you an example. Before, I said me and my wife were together for, we've been together for going on 11 years, and before we got married, we were together for about 5 years. In that 5 year time frame, the first 2-3 years in our dating relationship, we argued a lot. We argued almost every week, to the point where it was stressful, it was annoying. But then we still loved each other and still wanted to be with each other, we still argued. And you know, our friends from college who saw our arguments, like, man, y'all still together. They looked back at pictures and said, man, look at y'all now. Remember when y'all had this argument over this? We had some dumb arguments over some of the dumbest things. I remember one of the biggest arguments we ever had was we was at my apartment up at NIU, and we were watching What's Love Got to Do With It with the Tina Turner story. And everything was cool. And I made a comment in watching the movie, but I wasn't sensitive to, you know, some of the things that was happening in the movie. I didn't understand because I was sheltered, we're growing up. So I made a comment, and Joy got extremely mad at me. And it just blew up with a giant argument. And in that argument, everything that we had an argument about over the years that popped up, it was just a big smorgasbord of this conflict. And it was prompted by a movie. And in my head, I'm like, what in the world? This is from a movie. It doesn't make any sense. Why are we arguing over What Love Got to Do With It? You know? And so the argument ended, you know, with Joy walking home. And I'm like, no, you're not going to walk home. And me walking, following behind her. I ain't got no shoes on.
Oh, Lord.
I'm walking barefoot trying to make sure she don't get stopped by nobody drunk or nothing. So I was going, you know, I'm stressing myself out. She's being stressed out. It was all because of an argument that was petty. But we didn't know how to resolve conflict. And I think people today, when conflict arises, it's easy to just evade. It's easy to run away from it. It's easy not to deal with it because you don't have to deal with it. There's no true commitment that's going to force you to deal with issues. And when issues come, we can't kind of compare ourselves to others, like Janelle was saying, but we have to be ready to face on issues. And like I said earlier, my wife and I, we argued a lot in the beginning stages of our relationship. It was nothing physical, never anything physical. Like we hit each other. We wasn't stealing on each other and giving each other black eyes and stuff like that, like in the movie, What's Love Got to Do With It. But it was conflict. And we compared ourselves to others. Yeah, we were young. And when we compared ourselves to others, it made things difficult, and it didn't work out. And so when we started to really address conflict and really handle it face on, head on, that's when things began to lighten up. Now that we're married, we don't argue like we used to when we were dating. Mm-hmm. So it kind of prepped the ground to where all the petty stuff we did, we overcame it. So now we don't have to do
that. Let me see. If I remember the question, so you said, like, people who are divorced, do they, divorced or married, like, those who didn't last deal with some of the same issues, do we deal with some of the same issues? I mean, definitely I would say, I mean, I'm sure, you know, with marriage there's going to be similar issues, but, you know, everybody's situation, how they navigate it is different, so I definitely agree that you really can't compare, you can't hold yourself to someone else's standard. You can only create your own standard for your relationship. So I feel like it, you know, it all depends on how a couple chooses to deal with those matters, whether it be infidelity or addiction or mental illness. You know, it could be so many different things. Somebody is, you know, maybe one of them is not very, maybe somebody is being selfish in a relationship or someone isn't good with their finances. It could be so many different things that can contribute to, you know, having turmoil in a relationship. But I think ultimately it's how you, it comes down to that couple and how they navigate that situation, mm-hmm. how they choose to deal with that situation or not deal with that situation. And, you know, Chris and I, we've had, you know, our own share of things in our relationship, but it would be different, you know, from Janelle and Derek, you know, and how they may deal with something or how they may even converse about an issue. So it's mm-hmm. going to be different. There's a lot of things, a lot of components that can, you know, make or break a situation just down to how you talk mm-hmm. to someone, just down to how you talk to your spouse. And I know, you know, that's for me, that's something, you know, I could say in our relationship that Chris and I, you know, communication, that's a big thing as far as, you know, mm-hmm. just sometimes how I may come off and having to check myself because, you know, that could drive somebody away too. So it's so many things that can contribute to a relationship going bad, but then you really have to make the decision on how you're going to deal with it. If you're trying to stay in your relationship and you're really for commitment and, you know, really stand true to those vows, then you mm-hmm. go work through it. You go choose to stay mm-hmm. there even though you piss. You go choose to stay there even if you feel like love is lost. You're going to work through it.
So when you guys have problems, is there specific people that you go to, or do you just deal with each other? How do you guys handle that? Are there people you stay away from?
Yeah, we go to each other. We go to each other. I think that's a lot of issues with the younger people in different relationships. The first person that you go to is your spouse. Now, if you feel like you can't handle it beyond that, even the Bible advises to go seek godly counsel. And that means someone that it has a neutral, you know, neutral party in both your relationships and someone that's going to give you wisdom and good advice and sound advice and not mm-hmm. someone that's going to necessarily take your side or ride with you with what you're saying or, you know, go off on a tangent like, well, I don't know how you do it because I wouldn't be able to do it. Never yep. say that because you never know what situation you'll find yourself in. And so the first person you go to is your spouse about all topics, uncomfortable topics, you know, minor topics. You know, a lot of people always say choose your battles. Yeah, choose them. Choose when you're going to bring them up. That's how we work in our house. Choose when you're going to bring them up. You know, there's nothing that's off limits. There's nothing that we don't talk about. Now, are they always addressed or fixed? That's a different story. But we're always going to be talking about these issues. And so after talking to your spouse, if you want to seek help from your pastor or a close friend or an older married woman, married is the key word, older married woman or another married friend, that's always where we go to in our house. But that whole, you know, anyone else outside of anyone that's going to be impactful, sincere, or helpful, no, they can they can do without.
I know Joy and I definitely agree. We have some mentors that we speak, that we meet with periodically, like once every 2 months. And we're not, like, involving them in our business and things like that, but it's a couple that, you know, a godly couple, and mm-hmm. they've been married 20-plus years. And mm-hmm. because Joy and I never saw a positive marriage while growing up,
mm-hmm.
me growing up in a single-parent home and Joy growing up in a single-parent home, it's foreign land to us. So mm-hmm. Mentors have definitely been important. Like, it's certain things in our life that we experience that if we did not have mentors, we would have never overcame. So, perfect example. Like,
absolutely.
We were able to get our first house before the age of 30 just last year. And all of that happened because we were able to meet with our mentors and they were able to give us strategy and ways to overcome financial disparity, which we had grew up in, you know. And so, for us, it was really important to have mentors. I personally believe that all successful people have mentors. You're going to have someone who can show you the way
mm-hmm.
and help you remain successful in all relationships.
Right.
I agree with both Janelle and Chris that you definitely need to communicate with your spouse if there's an issue. Now, does it happen, you know, instantaneously where you're like, I'm going to go, you know, I don't, every time I argue or me and Chris have a disagreement, I don't necessarily go to him right away. Not all the time, you know, if in a perfect world, yes. But definitely I would say, you know, you definitely should be talking to your spouse. If you're talking to everybody else but your spouse, then, you know, that's a problem. If you talking, you know, on social media and bringing everybody into your household, that's a problem. You know, that's definitely an issue. I definitely think mentors, you know, our mentors have been very helpful in our relationship. And sometimes, you know, I might call one of them, particularly the wife, I'll call her. And, you know, if I have an issue or something, I may have, you know, certain feelings about something, and I'll call her, and, you know, if I'm wrong, she'll check me, or, you know, she'll, you know, just help me to put things back in perspective, you know, especially being a young married black woman, there aren't a lot of examples, you know what I mean? Of course, there's stuff on TV, but for me, I never really looked at that stuff. I just kind of based mine off of what I didn't want to experience when I got older. So then I went after what I wanted because I knew what I didn't want. I knew what I experienced, you know, having my mom in one place and my dad in one place. Yes, I had both of them. Both of them were loving and there for me, but it's definitely a different dynamic when you have a cohesive environment where you have, you know, just a sound environment where both people are on the same page. It's just, it's definitely different. And so, you know, I definitely think that you should have people, if you are going to talk to someone, you should have someone that's going to definitely hold you accountable, not a yes man, not somebody who will be like, girl, you need to go do this. And, you know, everybody don't need to be in your business because, you know, you could be telling somebody your business and they taking that to take notes. So, you know, I definitely think it's important to use wisdom in who you talk to, and it should definitely be a limit. And I think, you know, probably if there is someone who you talk to, your spouse should know about that person. You know, so for me and Chris, if I am going to talk to someone about advice, he knows them, and he knows that, you know, we may have had a conversation. Just a few days ago, Chris and I, we had a conversation about something. And when we got back together, he let me know that he, you know, talked to, you know, somebody who he felt comfortable enough talking to about a situation. And it helped him just to see a different perspective, you know. But again, it was a person that would be honest, that would hold them accountable, and who had, you know, didn't have ill intentions. So.
Okay. Well, let's get a little personal. Hopefully you guys are okay with this question. At what point in the relationship did you guys introduce sex?
It was a few hours after our wedding reception for us, just because that was important for us. And, you know, everyone has their own, I guess, preference of what they choose to do. But for me, I felt like it made our relationship in the beginning stronger. I mean, amazing communication, amazing alone, quiet time, really getting to know each other, great discussions, great car rides, you know. And so, I don't know, the absence of sex, I really feel like it forces you, if anything else, to get to know someone. What do you guys think, Joy?
I definitely agree. Chris and I, we waited to have sex until we were married. So we were both virgins when we got married. And it's not something that I usually just vocalize like that. but, I mean, I do think it was something that was important because for me, again, with my upbringing, me and my mom would have candid conversations about her experiences and relationships and what not to do. And just using wisdom. And, you know, all three of us came from the church. And so that's definitely, if people out there don't realize it already, it is a major component. And, you know, having that conversation with my mom, it wasn't just don't have sex until you're married because the Bible say don't do it. It was actually a conversation because for me, I'm going to ask why. I'm not going to do anything if I don't know why I'm doing it. So, you know, me and my mom would have a conversation just regarding the fact that, you know, when you're married, it's a covenant, you know, and it's something that you're coming together with a person and you're making a promise to that person, physically, emotionally, and all of these things that sex entails. And so for me, it was important that whoever I gave that to was somebody who I was going to be with for the rest of my life. That's not something that, you know, I felt like was just, oh, it's just a thing, you know. To me, it was more deep, it was much deeper than that, and it was important for me, again, to have that strong foundation in a relationship. So Chris and I, we didn't have sex until we said I do. And I think because of that, you know, God blessed our marriage, and I think it also it was an attest to self-control. And I think a lot of times, you know, when people, again, when people say they have, you know, marriage goals, you know, and want to be the power couple, they're not willing to really put in the discipline and work and that it involves and being obedient to God, you know, as you know, and really trying to understand why did even, you know, why would God make that, you know, where he would want you to wait until marriage. Again, it goes back to that covenant, and you're making a bond with a person. And so if I'm out there doing that with everybody, what of me could I have really given to my husband, you know, when I went into my marriage? And so that's how I looked at it. If I'm giving everybody a piece of joy, then once I marry this man, is he only really getting part of me, or is he getting the whole me? And so for me, that's why sex was more than just a physical thing. It was the emotional part. You know, when me and Chris, yeah, we argued a lot in the beginning of our relationship, but we didn't use sex to pacify that. So it forced us to deal with issues. It forced us to deal with ourselves. You know, and I think a lot of times when people jump into relationships or in marriage, they don't deal with themselves first and really deal with the matters of their own heart, because, you know, marriage won't take those things away. If anything, it'll expose it, and you'll be driving the other person crazy because you didn't choose to deal with yourself and your emotions and anything, any of your baggage before coming into a relationship. And so for me, I wanted to come into my marriage clean, and not saying that, you know, someone else is dirty or anything like that. I don't want nobody to think that. But it's just a different standard, and it's a completely different mentality and mindset when you really understand the importance of sex in the context of marriage.
True. Yeah, for me, man, sex was, it was difficult because all my friends was doing it. And I played sports. I played football in high school, and I attempted to play in college, but it didn't really work. But being a high school athlete, it didn't work out. I chose to go the academic route. Right. But, I mean, sex was always there. Sex, all my friends were doing it. I was called names because I wouldn't do it. Different females tried to get me to do it. Females would lie on me, say they had a relationship with me, stuff like that. So I was there too, you know, long plan. sex, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. This may sound lame, but I was honestly afraid of it. I didn't know what it would entail. I had never had sex before. My only reference to sex was probably a dirty movie, you know. So for me, I'm like, okay, I don't know. And my upbringing with sex, my mom told me, she was like, and she kind of did this to spook. She told me I was like 7 years old or around 10 years old. She was like, Chris, if you have, don't you know what sex is? I'm like, no. She explained it to me. She's like, if you have sex, you would die. I'm like, what?
So,
if you have sex, you would die. And then, I mean, she also was like, "Yeah, sex, and your guy fall off." So I'm like, "What are you talking about? Your male part?" I'm like, "Are you serious?"
Oh,
and
Lord.
But there was reason behind her saying that. And I actually just found this out about two, three years ago. But I mentioned earlier that my upbringing was in a single parent home, so my mother was married to my father, and my father, during the time of his life, I guess that his bachelor party or something before they got married, he ended up having a situation with a stripper or something like that at his bachelor party. The story's kind of gray to me because I'm telling what has
been told to
me. Right. So, in that, I guess he had stepped out on my mother before they were officially married. And he ended up contracting HIV. And this is my first time broadcasting this and saying this out loud. But my mother could have gotten affected, and I could have gotten infected. By the grace of God, my mom was not affected by the disease, and neither was I. So, like, God really covered us and shielded us and protected us within that. And this is all before I was born. So when I was born, my father had the virus, had the disease. And when he passed away, that's what he passed away from. And he swore on his, they swore on his deathbed. My mom swore on my father's deathbed that she would never let me know, never tell me. So it came to, I'm at a doctor's visit and getting a physical, and they asked me, is there any type of hereditary disease that I know of? And I'm thinking my father died from cancer for the past 28 years. I didn't know he had HIV. And I found out 2 years ago at the doctor's office because I had to call my mom, and she had to tell me. And for me, it broke me. But then I was able to understand her perspective and why she was so hard on me when it came to sex. I was pretty sheltered. She really didn't want me to have anything to do with sex because she felt like that was the main thing that destroyed my father. And so, and looking at that and experiencing that, having that experience, for me, looking back at it, I know why I was brought up the way I was brought up. But sex is really important. And sex, you know, in sex, it's fulfilling your emotional, your mental, your imaginary, and your intellectual desires. And so every time you have sex with someone, you are connecting and intertwining your soul. And so it's like, I talk to a lot of guys who say, oh, man, I'm just about to go smash. I'm about to go do this. You know what I'm saying? I don't really love her. I don't care about her. But the reality of it is you do. The reality of it is, even if you're not feeling it in your heart or seeing it, imagining it in your mind, there's something in your will that's causing this action to happen. There's a longing for something. There's a longing for attention. There's a longing for companionship. And within sex, I took it seriously to the point where I didn't want to compare my wife to anybody else. I didn't want to compare. I didn't want to have that burden. I don't want to compare and have that burden of, oh, I want to be, you know, I wonder how this girl did it. Oh, this girl did it better. I didn't want to have that on my conscience, on my heart, and I wanted to make sure that I was right for her. So one of my standards and requirements was I want my wife to have the same value system as I have, and it happened. So definitely, I mean, and if you look at biblically, I know you say we kind of all come from the church, but biblically, people weren't married officially until they had sex. Sex was like signing a dotted line. That was signing the contract. That was
a blood covenant.
Right. That was a blood covenant. That was a blood agreement saying that I'm going to be with you to the day I die. And there was symbolism within the Jewish culture and the times with sex. You know, you weren't married until you had sex, you know, until you consummated the marriage. And so every time you have sex with someone, there's no judgment to anyone, but every time you have sex with someone, you're marrying them physically. You're consummating and creating a covenant with that first covenant is a law, a binding agreement to death, you know. And so you're creating that with everyone you have sex with. And so I never want to be the one to have to go back and think about how many wives I got, you know. And so that sex was always important. I'm not going to lie, it was difficult. It was like, you know, everyday hazing process. But you know, it was real though. But we from us waiting, we, you know, we have two beautiful children, and we love each other. And I don't have to worry about my wife comparing me to anybody else. I don't have to worry about me comparing her to anybody else. We genuinely love each other, and we do whatever we can to make each other happy. So
let me ask this one. Because you said the first 2 years y'all fought all the time. And y'all didn't get married for 5 years into the relationship, and you guys didn't have sex until after marriage, right? Mm-hmm. So what did you guys do? Mm-hmm. I know that intention is there. So what did you guys do? what was the actions you took to say, you know what, I'm going to avoid this? You know, you knew those triggers were coming. What action did you take? Did you pre-plan it? Did you guys talk about it? When you seen it getting too close, did you guys, like, decide to stay away from each other? What did you do? Because I know
we had a,
Chris argued you with. After you would walk after him in socks and shoes, you know, without your shoes. You know, so you obviously loved him. You know?
Mm-hmm.
What would you?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We did a lot of stuff in like group activities, but after a while, you just want to spend some one-on-one time with that person. And I have two really good friends, Minty and O, that like to compare my situation to, oftentimes at the my husband now at the time my boyfriend and leaving out. Kicking bushes is what they like to say. But sometimes you just you have to walk out. Hey, I don't know what you thought, what you didn't think or what we agreed on, but arguments do ensue, but sometimes you just walk out frustrated or just feeling, you know, discouraged. And so, I mean, besides the group activities, group datings, a lot of movie nights, sometimes you just have to face the reality of that, man, this is hard. All right, I'm about to leave. No, you should leave. No, I got to go. Okay, well, you got to do what you got to do, you know. And so you just have to take precautions. Like you said, those triggers are there. Chris, Joy, and I would be unrealistic to think that it's not hard. You know, most of us have multiple degrees, and we can probably truly and legitimately say that that was one of the hardest things we've ever had to do was waiting before marriage. But it was worth it in our eyes, you know. So, I mean, you just have to do what you have to do. And whatever that is, if it means you have to walk out with no shoes chasing people or, you know, leave unexpectedly, you got to do what you got to do.
I know for a fact that O is listening to this right now and laughing. Because he remembers those moments, those conversations.
Uh-huh.
Go
ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
It was hard sometimes, literally. had to walk off. I mean, there was certain times we had to take her home. Be like, all right, you gotta go.
Great.
You know, it was hard. I can't even really describe because you really have to have discipline because there are a lot of other vices out there that you know you can entertain your mind with, and so really if you. I'm not going to say purity, but you really got to get your mind right. Because if you tank your mind with magazines and movies and things like that.
Right.
And music.
Problem.
And music.
Too, yeah. I had to watch a music I was listening to. And this had nothing to do with, I want to be holy. I want to be church. I want to be sanctified. This had nothing to do with that. This had to do with, I want to value.
I have a goal. Yep.
Yeah, I have a goal. And I want to value who I'm with. And so it's not... I'm not going to say it's not meant for everybody. It's meant for those. It's not meant for the faint of heart. So if you can't do it and if you know it's a struggle for you, then, I mean, sometimes I have to go to sleep with a cold towel, you know, on the way.
Sweating.
Chris, it's
funny you say that because there are a lot of factors that come with it that people don't think about. There are rejection factors in it. You know, am I not good enough? Does this person not like me like that? But at the same time, like you just said, it's not for the faint at heart. This is a decision that I have, a goal that I have in mind, and these are the tools that I'm going to take to get to that goal.
Yeah, I agree. And then you have those, you know, who, you know, I had family. You know, me and Chris were about 3-4 years in, and I remember I had a family member, you know, kind of, she asked me, and I was like, well, you know, we're not doing that till we married. And she kind of looked at me like, are you crazy? Like, what if it ain't good? You know, that's how she looked at me. And, you know, I just explained to her, like, you know, this is my choice. This is what I chose to do. Because, I mean, the reality is everybody, you know, even church or not, everybody ain't out here, you know, professing that they wanted to wait until marriage, you know. It's not, like, the most glamorous thing, you know. But I think what helped is, again, having, you know, the company of people that we kept were, their goals were the same, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody may have not met the goal, but ultimately it was the same, you know, that we were accountable to each other. We helped each other, you know, if I, you know, and it was also, too, about putting yourself in a situation to get tempted to go there, then it's, you know, you putting yourself in a trick bag doing that. So
right.
It was being mindful of your surroundings, being mindful of who you're, you know, of who you have in your circle, and then again, what you allow in, whether it be music or TV or whatever. Because I mean,
right.
Sex was everywhere, especially in college. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Everybody was doing it. So,
some rec parties, Joy.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Rec parties.
Yeah.
I mean, they were dang near having sex in the rec parties. So,
right.
You know, it was just a
but
matter
you know
of how. Of our environment.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? It's the same for any goal that you have. If your goal is to finish college, let's hang around some scholars. Now, we don't have to be around some geniuses, but let's hang around some people who go to class. Let's start there. You know,
right.
If your goal is to, you know, run a marathon, okay, maybe I should work, hang out with some people that work out. And so
mm-hmm.
with anything, you have to be around like-minded people. And Joy mentioned, some people didn't reach their goal. Are they bad people? No, absolutely not. They just succumbed to the temptation. That is huge.
Right.
However, we have to be there to build them back up and say, hey, that's okay. Let's start over.
Exactly.
Let's start over. Let's get a new goal.
Right. And then even going back to when you kind of mentioned the whole somebody who wants to run a marathon, a lot of it has to do with self-discipline, self-control. So, you know, being that sex was not something that I encountered before marriage, it would probably be harder for someone else who's had sex to not do it. You know, so I mean, the
mm-hmm.
fact that I didn't made it, I guess I had one up in that regard because I didn't have
mm-hmm.
sex. So, if I needed to leave or walk away from a situation, it was probably a lot more easier for me than someone else
mm-hmm.
who maybe haven't experienced it.
Right.
Now, I would say you have a choice to be a part of your environment. And I know a lot of people don't like that, but I believe that. Like, growing up in the city of Chicago, you have a choice what stereotype you want to fit in with. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like the whole sex thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have an opportunity and a choice to really succumb to what society and media said you should do or what you want to do for yourself.
Right.
What advice would you guys give to younger couples who are in and out of relationships, or they're back together, break up, and they're having problems? What advice would you give them that will help them succeed in the long term?
I would say it's okay. It is okay to take a break and to come back together. It is okay to, you know, break up, get back together, if it's in a healthy sense, you know. As long as, like, abuse isn't there, of course, or any, you know, any traits of violence are not there. If those are factors of why you're breaking up, those are legit factors. But if you're breaking up because of differences or struggles that you're trying to avoid, that's okay. You have to do what's necessary for you. And don't compare yourself to other people's relationships, and don't let other people dictate how you should be in a relationship. And so if that means, hey, we're breaking up because I got to spend more time in my word, or we're breaking up because I got to, you know, I'm taking UBiz 310 and it's 9 credit hours and I really have to focus. If you have legitimate or even just reasons that you value, that are reasons why you need to take a break from someone or to focus on yourself, it's okay to do so. So don't let anyone condemn you for the decisions that you're making for your life, as long as they're there to better you or to further yourself.
True. I would say, I know you mentioned the break, Janelle. Breaking can sometimes
mm-hmm.
be beneficial, but one thing I want people to understand, a break is not a pass. You know what I'm saying? So if you already committed to break.
Amen, Chris. That was good.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I'm about to go on this break.
Uh-huh.
I'm about to get with these three chicks who I like, who in my
right.
class, or who see
right.
me at the job, and then I'm going to come back with my main chick. No, man.
Right,
like, it's
right.
really serious.
That's
about
main.
It.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You want to make sure that if you want to be serious about a relationship, then be serious about the relationship. For me, I try to always think about my parents. Like, if my father
mm-hmm.
was alive, how would he have been? And so, you know, how would my mother be if my father was still here? You know?
Mm-hmm.
How would I have turned out? And I think in
mm-hmm.
seeing that, and with me having children, I value relationship differently because I don't want my children to grow up in a broken home or in a single parent home. And so that's one thing, I think. So, I mean, a break is not a fast. If you want to be with this person and you truly love this person, then make it work in that break. In that break time is time for you to work on yourself. That's time for you to get close to God. That's time for you to get a job. That's time for you to make some money strategies, get some entrepreneurial things going so that you have something to bring to the table. Also, if you want to be in a relationship, make sure you're bringing something to the table and then you're not just looking at what that person can do for you, but look, what can you do for what can we do for us, you know? You have to also know what you want in a relationship. And you got to love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to get to a relationship thinking that the next person is going to make you feel some type of way, make you feel this conception of love that you never had, it's incorrect. You got to love yourself first before you can love anyone else. And loving yourself, loving God, and then you can love someone else. Because I used to be insecure in me and George's relationship because I didn't love myself. I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think that I, you know, had what it took to be in a good relationship. And until I had to snap out of that and really start to love myself, then I was able to love my wife the way I needed to. And that's really important. And don't be a serial relationist. Serial relationist, somebody who's looking to start a new relationship. So, man, she got a fat booty. Let me get with her. I want to man, she's smart. Oh, man, she know how to do her homework. She know how to, on the job, how to do this. She know this. So you start using people to benefit you. So you don't want to become a serial relationist to where you're just looking at who can benefit you. Get your rocks off, and then you move on to the next one. That's really not relationship.
Right.
About. And that's all I really have.
I would say advice, definitely know what you want going into a relationship and keep your standards. You know, I would definitely say don't settle. Because if you settle, you're never going to be satisfied, you know, for one.
Yeah.
And then also, you need to really gain some information about the person who you're interested in, like really have a conversation with them, really get to know who they are, their likes, their dislikes, their belief system, their value system, because, you know, you definitely can't function in a relationship if you all are on two different chapters in a book. And so if you're going to be together, it's important to, like I said, you know, have standards for your relationship and know what you want coming in. And then also you need to be something that, you know, if your goal is to get into a serious relationship and be married, you have to be that person that you want so bad as well. You have to bring something worth it to the table, not just wanting, oh, I want a millionaire. And you still can't pay your bills on time. You know, like, you really, and that's just simple stuff. You really have to have a standard and then be the standard of what you want. That's what you're only attract what you're giving off. So if you're giving off being lazy and irresponsible, that's what you're going to attract, lazy, irresponsible people. So it's important to, you know, have a standard. Definitely. And, you know, my opinion, and I would say probably all of us across the board, you know, having God being the foundation to guide you in your decision-making so that you can discern the good and the bad, you know, and what to avoid if you're really talking about getting into a committed, serious relationship.
I think we're going to have to do a part two because I know you guys have to go. We have to do the interview a little early because of scheduling conflicts. But there are a few issues I still wanted to hit that maybe we can hit the next time if you guys agree to do the show again, which is I do want to talk about where does God's place in the relationship and spirituality, and then the role that men have.
Maybe we can wrap that up in 1 minute.
You said we could wrap that up in 1 minute?
His place is number one, and everything else follows. Part two concluded.
Part three now. But I really appreciate you guys. We probably will do another episode with you guys on if you guys choose to. So I want to thank you guys very much for being on the show. I want to thank the audience for listening. Hopefully you guys learned a lot. And if you have any questions, go ahead and email me at menalikshaw.com. You can reach me on Facebook for my guests. If they had questions for you guys, where can they contact you at?
Through your email.
Through my email? Nah.
Yeah.
If I had to hit them on Facebook. But I appreciate you guys. So thank you very much. And to the next time.
Yeah, they can if people have questions for me, they can contact me through my Facebook. Joy Renee is my, well, Joy Mitchell is my name on my Facebook. Or my email, I'll give my email out. joyjffrs@yahoo.com.
Right.
All right. If y'all want to reach me, my bad.
Go ahead, Chris.
If y'all want to reach me, Chris Mitchell, you can reach me on my Instagram, Stay So Fresh. Follow me, I'll follow back. Shoot me a DM. Also, you can reach me on Facebook, Christopher Mitchell. You'll see me there with a microphone. Or you can look at Say So Fresh on Facebook. Say So Fresh 1 on Twitter. Say So Fresh 1 on Snapchat. And on Periscope, Christopher Mitchell. So if you want to email me, SaySoFresh@gmail.com.
I don't have anything cool like that, Chris.
I'm sorry, Janelle.
Chris, I don't have any cool social media names. Follow me at Jesus Save. Like, I don't have one like you. I don't have a cool one like you, Chris. I'm going to step my game up.
I got you. I'll make you one.
Okay, good. Menti, thank you for having us on your show.
Yeah, thanks. Definitely looking forward to part.
I appreciate it. We'll set it up. Thank you guys very much. Till the next time.
All right.
The next one.
All right. Bye.
Peace.